This is the church, the steeple, the doors. Here's all the people. Is that theologically right? No. When did church become the thing that you went to and not the group of people that you were just part of? Hey, I'm a modern Christian. I'm an early church Christian. I don't have any underwear on. Let me tell you about our church. We have HD TVs, iPhones everywhere. I get fed there every week. So in the early church, they didn't really like go hang out like at big buildings. You guys have buildings? They just hung out in places together. All I know is that in my church, we share life, we share everything, and we love each other. They're just of one mind and one heart and one spirit. They hung out in synagogue. They just hung out together. No fancy program. It was just good Jesus time. We don't really just sit around and sing three songs and then have a trendy message with a really good-looking pastor. Neither do we. You know, we don't know a whole lot. It's not like they had Instagram, you know. They definitely did good stuff. Even the people that hated the Christians the most, they were like, man, we want to kill all these people, but they're really nice. But they killed them anyway. Anyway, they would do communion differently. They had things they called the agape. It was like love feasts. They got confused for orgies at the time, but there wasn't orgies happening. Not just like, hey guys, here's a wafer with a cross burned on it and a little cup of fruit juice. It's like feast. That's what they did. They loved on each other and they shared what goods they had. I don't know. It's not that complicated. We just spend time together. And when people are broken, we do what we can to heal them. And they weren't hippies in a commune either. They were just regular folk that came together with a unified purpose. They took care of the needs of the sick and the weary and the broken and told them that, hey man, there's release from this world and his name is Jesus. The church equals people. Too easy.
Oh man. You know, I love those videos, and Nick actually, that's a great summary of the church. It's a great summary of, minus the kiss. It's a great summary of what the church is and the picture of the church that we see. And that's what we're talking about in this series, Saints and Scoundrels, is that the church has always been this patchwork family of people who are imperfect, but that have gotten into relationship with Jesus, and the power of God has infused this community to be about changing the world. And in all of our imperfections and all of the things that we fall short on, God still wants this community to be about that. This, not just Crossroads community, but the church worldwide, all times in history, this patchwork family that he's brought together. So like I said earlier, if you weren't here for it, I'm Chuck Mingo, and along with Brian, kind of share the teaching load and the Oakley campus pastor here. And I have to tell you, the last place I thought I would be in my life is a pastor at a church. Because when I moved to Cincinnati, I thought it was a short-term stint. I came here for a job with a company in town and was definitely looking forward to promotion and more responsibility in that environment. And what really my wife and I found when we came here, particularly to Crossroads, was we found community in a powerful way. And I was a follower of Jesus, so was she before she came here, but our spiritual growth has grown exponentially. We've just grown in incredible ways, and it's been because of relationships in community that we've had here. And so I want to talk a little bit about our experience with this thing called the church and what it looks like when it really is operating on all cylinders. So I want you to know that I'm a little bit weird when it comes to this idea of the church. And I'm weird in a lot of ways, actually. My wife would give you other ways that I'm weird. So I'll share a couple of them. She gave me a list, and I took from the 100 things that she gave me a couple that I could share. So one of them is, I like milk in my cereal, but I don't like to drink milk. So what that means is, when I put milk in my cereal, for every spoonful, I drain the milk off the side of the bowl, and then I eat the cereal. To which somebody yesterday said, you know how you can help yourself with that? Use a fork, Chuck. That's just use a fork. Your fork does the same thing. So, brilliant. See, community. That's what you get when you're around other people. So that makes me a little bit weird. Another thing that makes me weird, I don't know why I do this. I really have tried to stop. Particularly when I'm drinking soda, I chew. I still chew, even though it's just liquid. That's really strange. Actually, I'm feeling a little bit exposed right now, so I'll just move on and tell you that even though those are ways that I am weird, the thing that makes me weird today, perhaps if you're listening to this today, it might be weird because I honestly take a kind of unscathing look at the history of the church, and when I do, I see beautiful marks of Jesus, and I see the church behind some of the worst things that have ever happened in human history. And even though that's the case, I still believe that this patchwork family called the church is God's greatest hope for changing the world. I still believe that saints and scoundrels can change the world. And I want to convince you of that today as well. So let's pray. God, I ask that you would, I can't convince people of anything. God, I say that and I recognize that I can't do what I just said. Only you can. Only you can give us a better and a bigger vision of what you call your family, the collection of people who follow Jesus, to be about. But I do pray that you would give us that today. And I pray that it would inspire us, and I pray that it would move us to want to be maybe a part of your family for the first time, or to be a part of your family in how we live our life this week. So I'm thankful for this time with friends. I'm thankful for this time with people who are open to hearing about you, and I pray that they would meet you here today. In Jesus' name, amen. So, you know, one of the reasons I have this confidence that this collection of saints and scoundrels can change the world is because it's always been a part of the DNA. It's always been a part of the DNA. When Jesus established this thing called the church, when he birthed it out of the 12 guys that he spent time with and what he gave them as the mission, he told them this was about changing the world. It was about showing the world what God was really like. It was about showing the world what it looks like when God's love is put on display in relationships with other people. And early in the history of the church, we see the power of this collection of people and the culture around them. Acts chapter 2 is an early history of the church, and it says, all the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. You know, there's some things about the way of Jesus that are just unequivocal facts in history. There's no doubt that Jesus and the followers that he had elevated the role of women unlike anything that had been seen in the time. That's just clear. It's also clear as you look at the history of the church that the church was a place that had always been a place where racial boundaries were being crossed, and you had Greeks hanging out with Jewish people and Jewish people hanging out with African people and African people hanging out with European people. That was always a part of the DNA of the church. It was a place where everybody could come together and be one under the banner of grace and under the banner of who Jesus is. The church was famous for their care of the poor. Every place the church went, the poor got taken care of. Every place the church went, they did things like started schools or started hospitals. This was the nature of this family. And when you look at that and you compare that to what we think of when we think of the church today, you have to ask yourself the question, if you're honest, what happened? What happened? Just this week, the Pew Research Center came out with a data point around how there's an increasing number of people in our country who do not identify with any religious organization, let alone a church. And so, as you can see, 16% of people, they call them the nun category because they don't have any religious organizational identification. It doesn't mean these people aren't spiritual. It doesn't mean that they don't believe in God. Some of them may not, but it doesn't mean that. But what it means is they look at really the expression of the church, they say, I don't want to identify with that. There's a growing number of people in our country that would say that. There's people in here that I'm sure would say that. You know, the truth is, other research has been done on why people may have that impression. And when you hear the top three perceptions people have of the church, it's pretty clear why the number of people who do not want to identify or affiliate with the church is growing. Because the top three perceptions of the church, according to some other research data points, is that the church is judgmental, the church is hypocritical, and the church is anti-homosexual. Now, let me just ask you a question. If on your neighborhood that was the reputation your family had, how easy would it be for people to want to engage with you? I mean, the reality is, this is not what we see in Acts 2, but this is what the church is perceived as today. There is a disconnect. There is a disconnect, and we've got to ask the question, two questions, really. One, how do we get there, and is it possible for us to not be that anymore? If you're part of this patchwork family called the church, is it possible that the church, this collection of saints and scoundrels, can still change the world? And I want you to know it is possible if certain things happen. And so we're going to look today in the book of Romans, which I think is a great summation of the story of God. You know, Romans starts out by being very honest about the brokenness of humanity. And then the writer, Paul, begins to talk about how God intervenes in the brokenness of humanity by sending Jesus. And Jesus brings reconciliation into the family of God. And later on in the letter of Rome, we're going to read the letter of Romans in chapter 12, he's saying, in light of what God has done for you, in light of who Jesus is to you, here's how this should play out in relationships that we have with people in the family and with people outside the family. And so in Romans chapter 12, he starts by saying this, therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, in view of the grace that's been given to you, in view of the kindness that God has shown you in Jesus, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. So the first thing he says is, if you understand the kind of grace that you've received, you will be able to have a posture of life of whole life sacrifice to this God, out of gratitude, not out of obligation, but out of gratitude. He goes on to say, do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment, in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. And what Paul is going to unravel in this letter, in this particular chapter, and we're going to look at, are four things that have to happen if this collection of saints and scoundrels can still be a world-changing family. And the first thing is, saints and scoundrels will change the world if we see grace as our only option in relationships. If we see grace as our only option in relationships, we can change the world. Paul says, in view of God's mercy, how you deal with other people should be from a perspective of seeing them through the lens of the grace that's been given to you. I want to tell you guys something that happened a week ago, because you might hear about it from other sources, and I just want you to hear it from me first. My wife and I, we have two kids. My youngest one, Sam, 1.5, is showing all of those great signs of being very much on the cusp of the terrible twos. Isn't that beautiful as a parent? You just love that face. So throwing food, not listening, defiant, you know, just he's like all over the place. Great energy. He's a great kid. But just, you know, we're struggling with that because it's like, gosh, it's so hard when your kid has the ability to cause a lot of damage, but the inability to listen to discipline. So it's like you're in that phase and it's tough. So last week we were at the zoo. And while we were at the zoo, you know, Sam was in rare form, throwing food at the zoo, all that kind of stuff. And so in the moment, my wife and I made a decision. We got together as a family, and we decided to leave Sam at the zoo. It's been about a week. I haven't heard anything negative. I'm sure somebody picked him up. He's a really cute kid. But we decided to leave him at the zoo. Now, here's the thing. Some of you who may know me and may, you know, kind of know that I love my kids dearly, you laugh at that because you know it's not true. Others of you, you laugh uncomfortably because you're like, no, did he really leave his kid at the zoo? Because the truth is, if I left my kid at the zoo, I'm going to jail. And the reason I'm going to jail is because intuitively we understand that there are certain relationships where even if my needs aren't getting met, it doesn't mean my needs aren't important, but if my needs aren't getting met, the relationship is more important than my needs, right? We understand that. The parent-child being one of those kinds of relationships. Let me tell you, that's what grace is all about. That's why Paul says, in view of God's mercy, you can be gracious to other people, because here's the deal. There are going to be people who are imperfect. There are going to be people who annoy you in the family of God. There are going to be people who bother you. There are going to be people who have different opinions from you. But if we see grace as our only option, if we recognize that, not that my needs are unimportant, but my needs, you agreeing with everything I say, is not more important than the relationship we have because of God's grace. If grace is our only option, we can change the world. Because everybody's looking for that kind of relationship. Everybody wants that kind of connection. See, really, there's two kinds of relationships. One is this relationship of grace, and I'm going to call that a covenant relationship. That's a biblical word, and it really is a relationship. When I marry people, I've said this before, you married a person because of whatever, you know, because they were kind, because I, you know, we had the same values, whatever. But let me tell you, when you enter into the covenant of marriage, you are married to them regardless of. That's a different kind of thing. What that means is not that your needs are unimportant, but your needs are not more important than the covenant. That's a covenant relationship. Now, on the flip side, we have a lot of consumer relationships in our life. Maybe you shop at Kroger, maybe you shop at Biggs, maybe you shop at Meijer or somewhere else. That's a consumer relationship. You may know the cashiers there. You may really like the folks who work there. But at the end of the day, you shop where you shop because in your estimation, for your family, you can get good produce at a good price, right? And if either of those two dynamic changes, even if you love Miss Millie, that is the cashier at Kroger, you will leave Kroger and you will shop somewhere else, right? Because in a consumer relationship, your needs are more important than the relationship. But that's not the way it should be in the family of God. Grace should be our only option, and we all want that kind of relationship. You know, it's funny to look back on the history of sitcoms in our country, and what's interesting is you look at different generations, every sitcom that kind of reached the top had elements of this kind of covenantal feel to it. So for those of you who can remember this, in the 80s, there was a great sitcom, it used to come on Thursday nights, it happened at a bar in Boston. There was a particular guy, and every time he came into that bar, he got grace. So on the count of three, let's just call his name. One, two, three.
Norm!
Everybody wanted to be Norm from Cheers, right? Everybody wanted a place where everybody knows your name, right? I mean, that's what we all want. There's a part of that. That was why that show was so successful, because it was a place of belonging, and we all want that kind of place of belonging. So fast forward to my generation. I'm a Gen Xer, and in Generation X, particularly when I was in college, there was a show where characters like Monica and Chandler and Joey just took a lot of our time and energy and thought what was going to happen to them because it was all about friends, right? And even the song in Friends reflected this kind of relationship. I'll be there for you. Like, it was all about that. And then we got another sitcom in that same time period where it was all about the friendship and really about nothing else. In fact, that's the way it was pitched to NBC, that it was a 30-minute show about nothing. Any Seinfeld fans, right? Seinfeld was about the relationship and really about nothing else important. I mean, let's be honest. And it was hilarious. We loved it. But, I mean, they were always at the diner. It was just always this connection. And even fast forwarding to what we see on TV today, how many Modern Family fans do we have, right? Love that show. Love that show. It's a funny show. Talk about a patchwork family. Talk about a family that, as best as they could, they tried to put every kind of uniqueness and difference that exists in the American culture in a cast, in one show, in a half an hour, right? They've tried to do that. And you know what? There's something about that family that's attractive when they're getting along. When all of these different people who are living very disparate lives somehow can get along, there's something about that we say, man, that actually is quite, I kind of want that. That's because we're wired. We're wired to be in relationships of covenant. And when we see grace as our only option, in view of God's mercy to us, the family of God becomes a place where grace is the only option, where grace is the only option. You know, I think about a story that Jesus told that illustrates why this is our motivation, how this can be our motivation. He told a story of an ungrateful servant who had a debt that was enormous debt that they owed to their master. And in fact, this debt at the time, as Jesus is telling the story, the debt would have been the equivalent of owing someone multiple millions of dollars. And because it was a consumer relationship, the master was going to invoke all of the consequences that were rightfully his to invoke on this servant because he couldn't pay him back. So he's going to lock him up, he's going to lock his family up, he's going to lock his children up. They probably would have become indentured servants or slaves, and that was the way of the world at that time. And the master was going to invoke all of those consequences, and this servant just went to the master and he begged for mercy. And the master, out of grace, forgave the entire debt. And yet, the man who was forgiven went immediately to another man who just owed him a couple thousand dollars. And that man begged for mercy, but instead of giving mercy, the man who had just been forgiven applied the fullest extent of the law to get his money back from that person, locked him up, locked his family up. And when the master, who had forgiven millions, heard about it, he went to that servant and he said, I'm invoking my grace. I'm revoking my grace, and I am going to invoke all the consequences that you invoked on that man because it is clear to me that you do not appreciate or understand grace. And Jesus was actually giving this as a negative object lesson because here's what we need to understand. If you're in the family of God, and if you believe consistent with what the Bible says that you owed God a debt of sin, it's a cosmic debt that you could never pay, and you've been forgiven. You've been forgiven. And so if you actually recognize that, how can you not forgive someone who owes you a way smaller debt? A debt of a difference of opinion. A debt of maybe making a choice that you don't agree with. And so when grace is our only option in the church, all of a sudden, this is an attractive community to be a part of. Doesn't mean we agree with every choice. Doesn't mean we agree with every decision someone makes. But it does mean that we approach and lead with grace. We don't lead with judgment. We lead with grace. You know, I saw this truth in a really interesting place. Russell Brand, ex-husband of Katy Perry, has a show. and somebody sent me a clip from the show, and it was Russell Brand interviewing two guys from Westboro Baptist Church. Westboro Baptist Church, if you don't know, is the church where people from that church have traveled around the country to military funerals of veterans who have died in the current wars, and they hold up these signs that says, God hates fags. And he was interviewing these guys, and I really think he was trying to seek to understand where they were coming from. And I just watched this interaction, and my heart broke. My heart broke because, first of all, it broke because of all the people who represent the family of God that could be in an environment like that. He picked these guys. So my heart broke for what people, again, are going to think about the patchwork family. Because you know what? I believe those guys love Jesus. And they're connected to me. They're part of the family I'm a part of. But my heart breaks because these guys, I think, sincerely believe that God has called them to lead with judgment. And I'm just telling you, that doesn't seem consistent with Romans 12 to me. And I'm telling you, if we are a family, a patchwork family of people who lead with grace, man, we can change the world. We can change the world. In view of God's mercy, we can be people who see grace as our only option. Paul goes on to say this about the DNA of our community. For just as each of us has one body with many members, many parts, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ, we, though many, form one body. He's talking here about a deep, deep unity that is shared by everybody who is following Jesus. And each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. Another thing that I believe is true is that saints and scoundrels will change the world if we see our gifts as indispensable. If we see our gifts as indispensable, then we can change the world. I want you to know that each one of you in here who are a part of the family of God, you have gifts that I need. If I'm going to experience the fullness of God, and if we're going to be all that God calls us to be as a community, I need you to use your gift. See, here's the crazy thing about how we do church in America. Typically, when you come to an environment like this, only one person has their voice amplified at a time. And when you come into a place like this with screens, only one person has their body amplified. One of the greatest, I'm telling you, one of the most frequent things I hear when people meet me for the first time is, I thought you were taller. It's because you've been looking at me here. Yeah, I'm not that tall. And here's the thing. It's the way the mind works. We get to a place where we feel like there's a hierarchy. Brian, I thought, just knocked it out of the park last week when you talked about this. Listen, everybody gets to play in the family of God. Everybody is a priest in the family of God. I have no more direct connection to God than you do. And I, in fact, need you to be doing what you do well in the family of God, or else I'm going to miss out. And your gifts are for other people. Your gifts are for other people to be built into. They're to help other people be strengthened. God meets needs in the family through the family. He meets needs through your unique gifts. And in fact, I feel like this is one of the principles that is unique to followers of Jesus and unique to what we see in the biblical understanding. No gift is insignificant. Can I just be honest? You know, a lot of people say all faiths are the same. Here's one way they're not the same. I'm not picking on anybody who has beliefs that are aligning with Hinduism. I'm not picking on you, but I'm just pointing out a very clear difference. The Hindu belief has led to the caste system in countries, and it is very clear when you look at that system that some people are considered insignificant. And I'm just telling you, that's very different than the view we see in the Bible. In fact, Paul, in one point where he was talking about this idea of gifts, says this, on the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. You ever stubbed a toe? Well, then you understand that spiritual principle. And the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. You know, one of the hallmarks of this family of God, when we're operating our best, has been to reinforce the dignity of all human work, regardless of if it happens in a boardroom or if it's a street sweeper on a street. The dignity of all human work, because no gift is insignificant, and we need everybody playing. We need everybody bringing their unique gifts to the table if we're going to experience the fullness of God and if we're going to be a blessing to the world. You know, tomorrow's a holiday, Martin Luther King Day. Martin Luther King is definitely one of my spiritual heroes. I love so much of what he had to say. I love what he stood for. And one of the things he talked about was this idea of the dignity of work, the idea of everybody using their gifts, regardless of what field of play your gifts apply to. And he talked about a street sweeper, and he said this, If a man is called to be a street sweeper, he should sweep streets even as Michelangelo painted, or Beethoven composed music, or Shakespeare wrote poetry. He should sweep streets so well that all the hosts of heaven and earth will pause to say, here lived a great street sweeper who did his job well. Man, I don't know what your gifts are. I don't know what your calling is. But what I do know is this should be said of you, what is said about that street sweeper. Here is a person who used their gifts well. No gift is insignificant, and we can change the world as saints and scoundrels if we actually begin to believe that. It's not important that I believe that your gifts matter. What's more important is that you believe that your gifts matter and that we need them if we're going to be all that God has called us to be as this patchwork family who still can change the world. Paul goes on to say this, love must be sincere. Hate what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Let me tell you, one of the ways that we change the world, and actually one of the ways we keep our spiritual fervor, one of the ways that we continue to grow, one of the ways we continue to experience more maturity as followers of Jesus, is if we do this, we can change the world. Saints and scoundrels change the world if we shamelessly submit to growth. This is a hard one. This is a hard one. He says you need to honor one another above yourselves. And one of the ways we do that is when we're willing to lower ourselves so other people can help us grow. I'm totally a New Year's resolution person. I'm totally a goal setter. I've always been that way. Can I just tell you, the secret sauce that I've found in every area of my life where I've experienced significant and lasting change has been involving other people in the journey. And letting other people coach me, develop me, challenge me, grow me in ways that I can't grow myself. Just some examples from my life. You know, I've been shameless about this in the past, just talking about my history with pornography addiction, that was a struggle that I had. And I'm telling you, when I entered into recovery and got in community with other guys who helped me, who were willing to challenge me as I lowered myself, help me see ways to grow beyond where I was in that area, I'm just telling you, that's where I've experienced significant change. Not because of anything I've done on my own, not because of any prayer that I've done, not because of any fasting I've done. I'm not saying those things don't matter, but the way that God grows people is he grows them in community. That's why we do community groups, because that's a powerful thing. And if you're willing to not let shame, to not let pride be the reason that you don't lower yourself and honestly go to someone and say, hey, I need your help. I'm struggling with this, and I need you to help grow me. You're a friend. You know me. I need you to help me grow beyond where I am. I'm telling you, when we do that, we grow. And there are other parts of my life where I've experienced the same thing that are maybe not as challenging to talk about, but definitely life-changing for me. You know, fitness and health has been something that I've been looking at very differently over the last several years. And one of the things that I did a couple years ago is I got into running. And the only reason I got into running is because of community. Because there were people who were challenging me and encouraging me, hey, this is a way that you can take care of yourself. You need to try this. And so I, you know, if you'd asked me 6 years ago, do I like to run? I would say, it depends. Does somebody have a gun? Are they shooting at me? Yeah, then I like to run. But other than that, no, I don't like to run. I'm not a runner. I'm not a runner. But actually, because of being in community, I've accomplished some things in running that I never thought I would. In fact, this year, May 5th, I'm running the full Flying Pig. I don't know why. I still don't know why I'm doing that one. But no, I do. Actually, I want to do that. And so one of the things I did to make that commitment happen, I joined a running group here in town because I know that I'm going to get more out of running in community with other people, coaches who can help me, show me the things that maybe will help me be more efficient in my running. I just know in every area of my life, community has been powerful. You know, last year was definitely a weight loss journey for me. That was a big part of my story last year and continues to be as I'm maintaining and keeping it off. And let me tell you, if it wasn't for community, particularly a guy named Harry Moore who goes here at Crossroads, if it wasn't for his coaching on a weekly basis, getting together, challenging me, encouraging me to go beyond where I was, to understand why I was eating the way I was, not just what I was eating, I would not be where I am. And I'm telling you, as I look at where I was last year, I'm down significantly from last year. And as I look at where I am this year, as I look at how I'm thinking about food differently, as I think about health and the things in my life, I'll just be honest. I'm a little bit confident for Super Bowl this year. I'm a little bit confident. You know, if you haven't been here before, the Super Bowl is a lot of fun. Brian and I actually have a lot of fun going back and forth with each other. And I'm just telling you, I am very confident because it's not that Brian isn't changing. It isn't that. It's just that his change looks like more gray hair and more metrosexual purple shirts every weekend. So I'm just saying, I'm at my fighting weight. I'm feeling better about that. I'm not wearing ballet slippers for shoes on the weekend. And so I just feel like I can go at them this year. So we love having fun with that. One of the things that has me really confident for Super Bowl is my 40 time is down significantly. I don't know if you're watching football or not, but there's a guy whose story, I'm just infatuated with this guy, Colin Kaepernick. I think his story is incredible. He is this today going to have an opportunity to take the San Francisco 49ers to the Super Bowl for the first time in a really long time. And this dude is fast. His 40 time is 4.5 seconds. That means he can run 40 yards in 4.5 seconds. That's crazy fast. There's no way that I was running the 40 in under 4 last year. But this year, I'm telling you, with all the weight loss, I'm under 4 in my 40 time. I am under 4. I am confident I can run 40 yards in less than 4 minutes. I'm telling you, I know I can do it. And it's got me a little bit confident for Super Bowl. So, here's what I'm saying. In every area of life, every time I've grown, it's been the willingness to shamelessly submit to other people and let them help me grow. This is what we do for each other. This is a part of what it means to be in the family of God. And I think that's why this verse in Proverbs is so powerful. It's just a summation of this wisdom. It says, wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. Let me tell you something. If you want to be a person who changes the world, if you want to be a person who has a significant impact, then you have to be willing. You have to be willing to submit to other people who can help you grow beyond where you are right now. It's the only way it happens for you. Final thing Paul says in Romans 12 is this: be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with the Lord's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. See, the truth is saints and scoundrels change the world if we are promiscuously generous. If we are promiscuously generous, we change the world. Paul here is talking about blessing even those who curse you. He's talking about sharing with those who are in need, practicing hospitality, welcoming people into their homes. That's what that meant at that time. And it didn't just mean welcoming people in the family of God, but welcoming people because that was the way people traveled from city to city. And Paul was saying, I want you to be promiscuous. I want you to be on the edge of almost crazy in how you think about generosity because of God's kindness to you. And this is what the early church was. Again, going back to Acts chapter 2, it says, they broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. Why do you think they enjoyed the favor of all the people? Because they were generous. They were generous to everyone. You know, it's really interesting to think about contemporaries at the time when the church was burgeoning, at the time when these folks were doing this thing of just following Jesus, just being community and being generous as a result of that. There was a Roman emperor, Julian. He was called Julian the Apostate. And one of the things he tried to do was bring back paganism to the Roman Empire. And one of the biggest enemies he saw to the rise again, or the resurgence of paganism, was the rise of Christianity, the rise of this weird sect of people who followed Jesus, who had weird values that didn't line up with paganism at all. And so he was not a fan of followers of Jesus, and yet there were things about them that he couldn't ignore and recognize that it was actually the reason, the power behind the incredible impact that this community of Christ followers was having. One of the things that Julian said was this: Christians busy themselves on earth, but their citizenship is in heaven. They share their table with all, but not their bed with all. What he was talking about was the fact that in paganism and a lot of the religious experiences and a lot of the cultural expressions at the time, sexual promiscuity was just the way it was. People didn't have those kind of mores keeping them from it. In fact, there were whole systems of worship that involved going to temples and engaging with prostitutes. So that was just the way it was. And yet, in the midst of a culture that was incredibly promiscuous sexually, there was this weird collection of people, followers of Jesus, who valued chastity, who actually said, no, that God's intent is actually for one man and one woman to be together in a covenant of marriage for a lifetime. They actually valued that. They were weird. And yet, they weren't sexually promiscuous, but they were incredibly promiscuous with their food. As poor people who didn't have much, they welcomed everybody else to their table who needed food. they were incredibly promiscuous with their time and with their resources, and their kindness was just blowing people away. And I think that's why every day more and more people were being added to their number, because they were encountering a promiscuity of generosity that blew them away. And when people asked, well, what is it that makes you this way? People said, let us tell you about the God who was generous to us. And in fact, Julian goes on to say this, their success lies in their charity to strangers, because the Christians support both their own poor and ours as well. So they're not just supporting people in the family, but they're supporting people out of the family. The early church was known for their generosity. They were famous for their generosity. And I want to tell you, right now, there are people in this community called Crossroads who reflect that kind of generosity. And it's awesome to be a part of that kind of community. You need to know right now, there are people in here who have sacrificed and gave above and beyond what they normally would give to a church or to any kind of nonprofit to make sure that there's a place in our city where people in generational poverty can interact in real, honest, authentic relationships and move out of generational poverty to a place of thriving, called the CityLink Center on the West End. And the only reason that happened is because people were promiscuously generous to build that building and make it happen. Even though many of the people who contributed to that building will never get anything directly from it, they were willing to sacrifice to make it happen. Right now, 130 Crossroads folks are being promiscuous with vacation days and being promiscuous with money that they've raised or money that they've funded themselves to be in Soweto right now, where they can be building into the lives of kids in a school where the HIV rate is 40%. That's happening right now. People in India, right now, going over to girls who have been raped for profit and saying, we are here to encourage you and to encourage the people who serve you that God loves you, God cares about you. We want you to know that you matter to God and you matter to us, even though we live on the other side of the world. I want you to know there are people that you're sitting next to right now that are promiscuous enough to say that every month, everything that comes into our household financially, 10% of it goes to blessing other people, goes so that people have a place where they can hear about Jesus in languages that they can connect to and understand and connect to their everyday life. And I'm telling you that they're doing this not out of obligation, but they're doing this out of gratitude. I said this yesterday, and I'll say it here. We have a site up in Mason, and if we ever decide to stop being the church in Mason, the city of Mason should be bummed out because we're a blessing. We have a site down in Florence, and if we ever decide to stop being the church in Florence, Florence and all of the surrounding Northern Kentucky area should be incredibly devastated because we're a blessing. And here in Oakley, if we decide to stop being the church in the city of Cincinnati, in the core of the city, but also in all the neighborhoods of the city, city council and the mayor should call a special session because they want to pass a resolution to get us back in the city because we're a blessing to the city. That's what we're called to be, as the patchwork family of God. And I actually believe we still can. I actually believe we still can be this kind of people, but you know what? It starts with you being this kind of person. If you're this kind of person in your relationships, if you're this kind of person in your family, if you're this kind of person to your spouse, if you're this kind of person to your friends, if you're this kind of person with the people you work with, well, then we can be the kind of community that literally can change the world. So I have a challenge for you this week. And the challenge is this. I want you to think of one person in one sphere of your life. Maybe it's someone in your family. Maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's someone you work with. And I want you to be this kind of person to them somehow in the next 7 days. And maybe that looks like picking somebody right now and be thinking about who that person is and saying, you know what, this is the week where I'm going to extend them grace. Maybe there's forgiveness that needs to be extended. Maybe it's just grace of some other kind. But this is going to be the week where I extend grace to them because I want to be this kind of person. Maybe this is the week where you offer your gift in some way to serve someone else. Maybe you're a great cook. You're going to cook them a great meal. Maybe it's for a neighbor. Maybe a neighbor just had a kid. Maybe a neighbor just out of the blue. You're just going to say, hey, I just wanted you to know we were thinking about you guys, and here you go. We just wanted to serve you in this way. You know, maybe this is a week where you're going to use the gift of encouragement that God has given you. Maybe you're a manager. Maybe you're just a team player with somebody at work who's been getting it done. They've been working hard, and maybe you just know they could use some encouragement. Let this be the week where you just write them a note. Just say, hey, I notice what you're doing for the company, and it matters, and I appreciate you. Maybe this is the week where you will shamelessly submit to growth. And that might look like going to a friend and saying, hey, I got a struggle in my life that I need to grow in, and I need your help. I need you to help me. I need you to help me grow in this area. Maybe you're in a marriage and there's some things you're struggling with right now. And maybe this is the week where you'll say, you know what? We got to go to a counselor because I don't want our marriage to end, but we need help. Let's be willing to submit ourselves to someone who can help us grow beyond this. And I don't know what it is for you, but let this be the week where you choose to be this kind of person in some very tangible way. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to be generous this week. And it almost feels promiscuous to think about, boy, would I do that? Would I actually bless this person financially with this way, or maybe bless them with my time this way? Man, maybe that's the exact thing you need to do. Because I tell you what, if we are that kind of person in our relationships, then this patchwork family of God can be that kind of community in our city, in the region, and we can change the world. So let's pray. God, I pray that you would give us clarity on who it is that you're calling us to, who it is that you want us to serve this week, who it is that we need to extend grace to this week. Maybe it's someone in our very own home. Maybe it's someone on our neighborhood block. Maybe it's someone at work. Maybe it's someone in another sphere of our life. Give us clarity, God, on who it is you're calling us to this week, and then give us the courage to follow through. Give us the courage to be this kind of person, the kind of person who gives grace because we recognize that you give us grace, the kind of person who shares our gifts because we recognize that you give us gifts that we can't earn, the kind of person who submits ourselves to growth because we want to look more like your son, Jesus, and the kind of people who are famous for our generosity. So God, I ask that you would make us those kinds of people, that you would make me that kind of person in my own relationships. Because this is what you've called this family to be, and I believe that when we live this way, we can still change the world. In Jesus' name, amen.